What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, as we have been doing the past couple of weeks, we're going to talk about one of our favorite books of yesteryear. This week, we are going to be talking about Manhunter, Volume 1, Street Justice, written by Mark Andrako, pencils by Jay Lee and Jesus Saeed, inks by Jay Lee and none other than Jimmy Pamiotti. Woo-hoo! Now, for a little bit of context here, this was originally released, the series, starting October 2004. This volume came out December 2005. This collects the first five issues of the series that ultimately ran and got canceled a bunch of different times just because people were not reading it, honestly.
That sucks.
I mean, they weren't.
Like, okay, it was great. Alex, I love this book. Tell it to us straight, huh?
Yeah, Alex, why don't you shit on it right from the top?
Wow. Well, no, I love this book, and I was so excited.
I love this book.
I love this book.
Well, I guess we're going to have to duel for her hand in marriage.
Oh, boy.
This book is great. This is a very dark take on superheroes. In the general thrust of the book, it's about Kate Spencer. She is the DA in Los Angeles. She gets fed up with the turnstile that puts criminals, specifically superpowered criminals, on the street, decides to do something about it. And the first arc is her putting on a costume, killing a supervillain, and then dealing with the consequences of that, which predictably go very bad. But she smokes, she swears, she kills people. She is a divorced mother, not doing a very good job with...
Hey, come on.
She's doing a very bad job with her son.
What? She accidentally left some explosives around that her kid found. That could happen to anybody.
Wow. Yeah. So lots of stuff going on in here. Again, just sort of broad strokes. I think this book, it was so great revisiting it because I feel like it completely not only holds up, but feels relevant today in the same way that it did when it was released. And that's awesome. What were your guys' takes on this book?
This book made me miss smoking in restaurants. You know what I mean? Like, those were the good old days.
This book loves smoking. This book, every issue has some sort of like, I'm going to smoke in here, and people being like, don't. She's like, I will.
Yeah, that was funny. There was one part where she's just like in a restaurant and goes to light up, and the waitress is like, you haven't been able to smoke in here for like 5 years.
Yeah. It's very fun, that fun little runner through. But, I mean, across the board, that's what I like about this book. It's a premise we've seen, the idea of like, I'm going to finally do what needs to be done. When it comes to villains, like, just not letting them go back on the streets is bad for the country. I'm going to take care of it. But this is like, feels like it's a little more grounded and laser focused on that idea. And you really, I just buy it more with Kate Spencer, actually out there. Her life feels really bleak and fucked up all the time. And so
that's why I liked it. I really liked how, like, she's struggling. She's not killing it in life. She is. There's a lot of things going on, and she's having a hard time, you know? And I find it very relatable. I loved her anger. I think it's a great take on this character that's been around for a while, a fresh take, if you will. And I was sad to see that this book didn't do so well because it's one of my favorites.
Well, but it's a successful, like, it's so hard to create a new character in modern comics that lasts, like a new hero that really can get legs and go. And I think Mark Andrako's Manhunter has really done that, played a big role in the most recent Brian Michael Bendis crossover there. So, like, I think it's definitely a success despite the sort of fits and starts it took to keep the character going.
Yeah. Well, to talk through that a little bit, so I believe it started where they said, hey, this is going to tie into Identity Crisis, which was the big event that was coming up. In case you folks listening don't remember that, that was by Brad Metzler.
Meltzer.
And it was a similarly grounded murder mystery set in the DC universe. Very controversial story for a lot of reasons, but it was certainly highly anticipated at the time. And so they were trying to give Manhunter the best way of launching that it possibly could. From there, and I'll admit, I love this so much that, like, I tried to hold back and only read the things we're talking about, but I was sitting here in quarantine and the I have the other two volumes in my bookcase, and I was like, I'll just read those. Just go ahead and I'll read them.
Alex and taking advantage of the quarantine to do what he wants. It's Alex time.
I don't care.
We're all living on Alex time.
Salvin don't give a fuck.
It's funny because I actually, Alex's job called me and I had to step in for him for like 2 hours today because he was too busy.
Thanks for doing that, by the way.
Manhunter.
I was right on the brink. I almost got fired, but you talked them into firing me, is I think what happened.
That's right. I'm sort of like a fun Ferris Bueller who doesn't care what happens to people. Yeah.
Cool, man.
That's a good way to describe
you. Let's drive that car right out of my dad's house. So
interesting how quickly you put yourself in that role, Alex. You're like, I'm Cameron. I'm not super happy.
Between the two of us, who is the Ferris Bueller here?
I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong. And of course, Pete is the principal.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Chasing us around town, trying to give us a truancy. Come on, man. Lay off of it. Get off my jock. Anyway, the reason that I brought it up, though, is that over the course of the run, they clearly had a lot of faith in this book and kept trying to tie it in intrinsically into all the events that were happening. It goes on beyond that third volume, which is, I believe, the first time it was canceled, was issue 23. And then ultimately they went up to issue 38. Kate Spencer, as you were saying, was brought into various other books. I think she was moved to Gotham City, and it was like not Gotham City Central, but whatever followed up on that. She was also in Birds of Prey when Gail Simone rebooted it.
Yeah.
But even the book itself, it tied into, I don't know, I want to say like Countdown and 52. And there was all these things where I was like, oh, I vaguely remember this with these supervillains going amok in Metropolis. But there was these things where like they kept trying to give the book proper footing to work in the greater universe. But I think you can tell from the first pages of this volume, the way that Jesus Ayiz draws it and the way Jimmy Palmiotti inks it, it's so dark. Like there's Copperhead, who's this hideous snake-like villain or lizard-like villain who's broken.
Snake.
Yeah, there you go. He just has legs. It's confusing. He's broken out of a police vehicle. That's a kind of a flash forward, flashback type situation, but it's bloody. It's disgusting. There's piles of bodies. When eventually we meet Kate and Copperhead, Copperhead is in chains, Hannibal Lecter style, this trial. And it's terrifying. Like the whole thing across the board.
Yeah, Copperhead so set straight it up right eats there. People.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
So what did you think about that opening? What did you think about the way that they introduced Kate Spencer in this book?
It's emotionally dark. Like her as a character, like doesn't give you that sort of, I'm just a person living a normal life and I'm making this choice to heroically sacrifice my life to go do these harder things. She's like, her life is not happy, but she's like, well, I'm going to do this because I'm pissed. And goes out and starts fighting crime and then murdering people.
Yeah, I was really impressed with like the gore and kind of like the violence, the way it started off with. You know, I think it did a good job of like setting the tone of like, okay, this is going to be different. This isn't going to be like your normal bright and sunny. Here's a person who's got all their shit together. I mean, she barely does much right. And so I thought it was a set it apart from other books and stuff that I've read. So I thought that was a powerful start. And even like the fucked up dream that happens later that Batman's in, I was like, oh shit, like this is crazy. And then kind of like the dream reveal. And I was like, okay, all right, phew. But it's kind of like setting this thing of like, we're really going to push things and we're going to go places. So I think they did a great job with that.
Just to clarify about that dream sequence, so this starts off, I want to say, the second, probably the third issue, right? Where she dreams she's going into Arkham Asylum. She's already killed Copperhead in the real world.
This is the second issue, yeah.
Second issue. She's in Arkham Asylum. She's going in. She kills the Joker. She kills all of the rest of the Batman villains, frees Batman, and he immediately is like, what are you doing? You can't kill people. How dare you? And it turns out it's this stress dream that she's having off of what she's done. So to take a step back, though, and kind of tie into this, why do you
but
think
not we- just it's not just the like that would be one thing if it was Batman just being like, hey, you can't do that, but Batman hits her And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Well, he doesn't say fuck, but like, and I was like, whoa, Batman doesn't, this isn't the Batman that I've ever seen. So like,
the dream Batman. Was like,
yeah.
It's the Batman who hits people.
Yeah. I was so happy it was a dream because I got real worried about like the comic the first time I read it.
Because you didn't want Batman to hit people?
Well, or you don't like dreams. Batman. I didn't want to have Batman to hit her.
Oh, okay. But you
don't like dreams, though, right, Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have them.
You don't have them at all?
Yeah, the key is to just pass out and then wake up and repeat. You know what I mean? Mm.
Ah, repeat the page.
What phrase did you use? You called them bad night comics?
When you have an anxiety dream, like Kate does in this section, what happens in your stress anxiety dreams?
You know, it's usually like I'm back at an old job or something that I hated.
Like what? Be specific.
Yeah, like what job, Pete?
Back at retail, working at retail.
Oh, okay. Where in retail? What company?
This isn't an investigation. Just tell us.
Well, I don't know why you you're being so specific about this.
Because this is a conversation. I'm not your parents asking you what you did last night. I'm just like, hey, buddy.
Would like to know what you did last night, Pete.
Yeah, why'd you get home so late?
What were you up to?
What were you out doing?
Yeah.
You and your friends. You think you're your friends? What are those friends? They're losers.
Were you smoking, Pete? Because I could smell it on your breath, Pete.
Yes, exactly right. You tried to hide it with that minty gum.
You don't know anything about me. You don't know what it's like. I'm out of here.
Okay, I think he's out of here so we can talk about Manhunter.
Right.
Wait, so the question that I wanted to ask, though, is if we accept the fact that Kate is this character who at least is having enough stress dreams that she kind of regrets what she was doing in terms of killing Copperhead. She's clearly good at being a DA. But that's pretty much it. Like, she's not a great superhero yet. She's not a great mom. She's not a great wife. She's divorced. She's not great at being a human being or relating to other people. So why do we identify with a character like this? Why are we interested in reading about a character like this?
Because she's trying to be a hero and do good. That's why.
Yeah, what I think is so smart about the way it's done is we are in her head the whole time. She's like, I messed that up. Like, you get to really... Mm-hmm. You believe her and you sort of ride with her, I think, because she's so honest in her monologue, and we don't have to be making we don't judge her because we know what she's actually thinking, and what she's thinking is good.
Yeah. Two aspects that get set up pretty quickly in the series. The first one is that she actually found her costume. This isn't revealed until several volumes down the road. I think it's in the third, maybe towards the end of the second volume or the beginning of the third volume. But her costume is made up of a couple of different things. She is actually wearing a Darkstar's costume, which comes off of the Green Lantern continuity. They're sort of like evil Green Lanterns. Her gauntlets, oh gosh, I'm forgetting where her gauntlets are from. They're from Azrael, from the evil Batman. And then her staff is actually from a previous Manhunter that's slightly working off of Starman tech as well. So the thing that they do that I think is so smart is Mark and Draco, clearly right at the beginning, even though he doesn't give us the information, between that and it turns out later she's actually related to several superheroes from the DC universe. So there's various other ties. She was a roommate with somebody, Cameron Chase, I think her name is, who is an investigator for the DEO. She ends up working for the DEO. But there's all this stuff that's very laid in very early that clearly pays off later on in the run, but it's not necessary for enjoying it in the first place, which I think is kind of great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like, yeah, it's not necessary. The way it's very smart, everything, through every issue throughout this first run really just tells you the story that's right in front of you. It doesn't give you or dwell on all that classic origin stuff where it's like, so what is the deal with all this? The schematic of the gloves and all that. No, we don't need to know that. We just need to know that she goes and hassles this guy into becoming her like tech guy, and he's like, "Hey, I made these a little bit better."
But also, what I like about it is like you're rooting for her in a way that's like very interesting, where you're like, you're almost rooting for her more to be a better person than she is at being a superhero. Like, what happened to her kid is so fucked up. You're like, oh my God, yeah. You've got to really get on this. You can't forget about when your kid's coming to visit and, like, you know, you can't leave weapons around, you know, like, it's almost like that part is almost more intense than the fun superhero stuff. And it's very interesting that way.
Well, that part in particular, I think, is one of the more powerful sequences that happens in the first volume. So she's gone through her first two, maybe three battles as a superhero, and she doesn't know where to leave her costume. She doesn't know where to leave her staff. And it's ultimately in the closet, but her son finds it and uses it. And it's a perfect superhero metaphor for having a gun around the house, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the same exact thing, plays out in exactly the same way. And it turns out okay in the long run, but I love that they're playing out like, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Punisher, just a quote-unquote hero who goes out and kills people. The fact that they are playing it out semi-realistically with Kate Spencer, where she is a superhero that kills, so she basically, she's like, no, I'm taking my gun and I'm killing people. But that her gun does end up causing a tragedy in her own house with her kid is a very realistic and true thing to happen. And the fact that it's through the metaphor of a superhero makes it, I think, all the much more stronger.
Yeah,
for sure. Agreed. I also like the and that was the end of the second issue, I think, and what a horrifying cliffhanger it was. Just really well timed and well paced. But the fight with the Shadow Thief, I thought, was really great, and one where you really was like, we're like, oh, jeez, I don't think she's gonna come out of this right. I think she's not doing well.
Yeah, you're really worried for her in this fight, and yeah, like it's so intense, and like there's nobody else in the world, because there's a lot of time when you're watching a superhero thing or reading a superhero comic, you're like, oh well, so and so is going to save the day or be able to catch them or whatever, last minute show up, but it's just her. So like the struggle of her on the rooftop going like literally hanging by her fingertips or her claw tips or whatever. But yeah, it was just really intense, and I couldn't, it was such a well kind of set up and drawn and told story.
What did you think of the death?
What did you think of the death of
everyone's favorite character, Firestorm?
Wait, which character?
Firestorm.
Yes. So, yeah, just to give it a little bit of context, this is the part that specifically spins off of Identity Crisis. About halfway through the series, Shadow Thief, who is a insane supervillain, who has like kind of like a venom-y shadow suit sort of thing going on and a second voice in his head, kills Firestorm, runs away, finds out that his friend Copperhead has been killed, and goes after Kate Spencer as a result. And that really kicks things into the second half of the volume and also leads into the events and reverberates throughout the second volume and things that happen there as well. And it is intense and it is dark. And the other thing that I really like about it is it does give these shades of, we're not going to have it like Kate comes in every issue and kills a supervillain, and that's the issue of the week. It's that she understands that there are shades and differences there in terms of how she deals with the villains, I think is a very smart character choice as well.
Yeah. I also really liked how, like, this kind of iteration of Manhunter, it's a woman doing it, where before it's been a bunch of dudes. So this was also, like, a real cool, kind of powerful choice as well. Yeah, I mean, it goes into a lot of different directions, but I just think it's interesting kind of like setup of like putting you in the middle of the shit and then seeing if somebody can literally claw their way out of it.
Now, what do you think? I feel like after this this volume, or like the end of the run of this initial first 38 issues, it feels like the character sort of softened a little bit. She makes more jokes. She isn't quite as hard edged. How do you feel about that? Because I think that it feels like it takes a little bit of the edge off.
I mean, this is a character that I would say Mark and Draco owns almost in the same way that James Robinson owns Starman, you know, like,
yeah.
Nobody has written Kate Spencer better than Mark and Draco. Like, Mark and Draco got her forward and backwards. He clearly had this very concrete plan for her history, where things go, to talk about the Manhunter thing. When you get into subsequent volumes, it actually delves very heavily into the history of the Manhunters, and even to the point of what we were talking about, where she showed up in the middle of the Event Leviathan thing, where ultimately it was revealed that Mark Shaw, former Manhunter, was the bad guy. Mark Shaw is in the book. Like, he's a character in the book, and they do a very good job with his character and throwing him into the mix with Kate in a very different way. But yeah, I mean, that's a temptation, right? Like, you're making comics for everyone, so the default is to make it a little more accessible. You know, if she was going out and putting her son in a coma and smoking and cursing and sleeping with random guys and killing supervillains all over the place, that's just not going to work in the same book as Superbad.
Right. I also think that, like, yeah, she does soften a little bit. And she even talks about early on, like, it's hard to fight and quip, you know? So, like, it's interesting about characters who kind of find that naturally. And it kind of is cool to hear as a hero talks about, like, the struggle of that, you know?
Of the quipping.
Yeah, the quipping. Being able to quip.
Quip.
Quip. There we go. Were those quips?
Yeah, when you don't have a quip, you can just say quip and come back and write it later.
Yeah. Right.
That's like why Spider-Man, his sound effect is thwip, because it sounds like quip.
That was a quip. Yeah, that was a quip there.
Yeah, there we go. One character I did want to talk about that we touched on very briefly that I absolutely love, not as much as Kate, but pretty close, is Dylan Battles, who is introduced pretty early on as well. This is her tech guru. The great idea, this such a smart idea here, is he is a henchman, and he was the tech guy for basically every supervillain. And
you get to see this fun montage.
Yeah,
it's great. You get to see he worked for Black Manta. He worked for, I want to say, Penguin, maybe Mr. Freeze. And it plays in so well across the series. The thing that's great about his character is he's the tech guru. He looks like a nerd. He has all of this equipment that he has saved from all of his supervillain exploits. But he's also, like, a total Lothario and gets with absolutely every woman all the time, which is such a, like, weird, funny detail to contrast with everything else going on with him.
I mean, henchman, you're out there, you're meeting people, you're in the game. And, you know, with that hench life, it's crazy. You never know you're going to fall into bed with another henchman or henchwoman.
Mm-hmm. Also, what's interesting is, like, how, like, scared she is of superheroes. You know what I mean? Like, when Martian Manhunter and stuff comes to, and Hawkman, like, comes to her office, that's such an intense couple of panels, you know?
Well, what would you do if Hawkman showed up to your office?
I'd be like, hell yeah, Hawkman, what's up? Welcome.
Well, first you'd be like, yo, we are under quarantine. You gotta go somewhere else. You can't be here in the office.
First off, you're going to tell Hawkman to put a shirt on?
That dude must smell bad. Not good. No shirt. He's just wearing like a belt, couple belts around his body.
Yeah, but that's what deodorant. You know, put on a bunch of deodorant.
You think Hawkman, very angry man, is putting deodorant on? Plus, do you put deodorant on under the wings?
Oh,
great question. Yeah. Which member of the Justice League, though? Honestly, which member of the Justice League smells good? Because I'm going to say none of them.
Oh, come on.
Hawkman definitely smells gross, like Justin was saying. Aquaman smells like the sea and fish. Terrible.
Mm. Not terrible.
It depends. Yeah. He might have a nice sort of
sometimes
salty.
Sometimes it's something like the smell of the ocean,
you
know?
Do you think Batman doesn't sweat like a motherfucker? Like, he always has 5 o'clock shadow at 9 a.m. Like, he is just sweating all the time in that suit.
Well, plus, you know, the capes are like blankets. You're going to be hot.
Sure. The Flash is running everywhere. He's sweating up a storm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that would be. But he could also run and shower, but then by the time he runs back, oh, man. Yeah.
Stinks again. Yeah. He stinks again.
Yeah. Maybe Superman just naturally smells good, though.
I would think more Martian Manhunter smells good, naturally, because he's got like sort of a Martian vibe. You know? Mars?
Yeah. Yeah, Mars. So if we were to say one bad thing about this comic book, I think it's that they didn't describe how the Justice League smells. But otherwise, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's. I want to see. When are we going to see the stink lines? Where are we with the stink lines in the comic book world?
Yeah, when they started the Justice League, the idea was to make a pig pen comic book, and it ran out of control. Get back to the original idea.
Exactly.
Clouds of dust, stink lines, all that stuff going on.
Except I want to see more dust.
Any final thoughts on Manhunter? Other things that you'd want to say about the book, scenes that bounced out to you?
Yeah, I just like the fact that they, like, you know, we kind of normally in like a they gave a little they talked about sidekicks, you know what I mean? Like, he got stories. He's a part of the team. Like, I like that it was a part of it moving forward. Like, we got the kind of origin story a little bit. So I was happy about that. It wasn't just like a Foggy Nelson type of treatment where it was just like, yeah, and there's this guy here who kind of is an important part of it, but we don't give him the credit that he is ever due. So I kind of appreciated that. But overall, I just think it was such a cool idea to have such a flawed character kind of struggle in a way and kind of us kind of give immediately start to root for something.
Justin, what about you?
I guess I want to give it up for the action sequences in this book. I feel like they're really great. They're really smartly edited. Like, we don't really get to see the full Copperhead battle. We just get to see a bunch of it and then see him beaten. We get to see him eat people and the aftermath, but we don't have to see the whole thing. Like, it makes for a much more satisfying read. We get more story because we're getting to fill in the gaps in our head of the action sequences, and I like that a lot.
Yeah, this is a great book. I think, unfortunately, it's out of print right now, so really you're only going to get it on a secondary market or used books or something like that, though I believe it's on Comixology and other sites as well, so you might be able to download it that way. But it's great. Definitely read the first volume if you never have. You'll be completely hooked, and as we mentioned, it is as current now as it was when it was first published. At the very least, read through the first three volumes if you like it. That's a nice, satisfying run, but I believe it went up to 5 volumes total. Pete, you had a final thought.
Well, I remembered also it was in Leviathan. Manhunters were part of the Leviathan. That was a pretty recent crossover, too.
That's true. Yes, what a good new point to bring up.
We mentioned that a little earlier, Pete.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Nah, that's all right.
That's okay, man. It's totally
cool. Yeah, don't worry about it.
So you were probably having an anxiety dream about working in retail or whatever secrets.
You're probably having one of your night bad comics, I bet. If you want to support our show,
Patreon. I had a brain cartoon.
If you want to support our show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. direct to the internet on Crowdcast and YouTube. Come hang out with us there. They have been a lot of fun. You can subscribe to this podcast in its own feed on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. On iTunes, please leave us a comment. We appreciate those a whole lot. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. We'll see you next time.